We'll move to questions without notice, and I give the call to the Honourable the Leader of the Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Prime Minister. Prime Minister, yesterday I met with the Chinese Communist Party's top diplomat who was here in Australia, and I commented and made clear my remarks in relation to China's attack on Australian Navy divers and expressed a very strong view that it was totally unacceptable and unprovoked. Why didn't the Prime Minister raise the attack on the Australian Navy divers when he met with President Xi?
Give the call to the Prime Minister.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker. The premise of the question is wrong, completely wrong. And yesterday, indeed, this official also met with the Foreign Minister, Penny Wong. It was a formal meeting, and it was raised again by her, as was appropriate. Well, can I make this point as well, Mr. Speaker? I've put on the record a number of times the difference between private discussions, which the Leader of the Opposition has said should not be disclosed, himself, as has former Prime Ministers Abbott, Turnbull and Morrison. And I have been consistent with that. But we've been very clear about the government expressing our concerns about the HMAS Toowoomba incident clearly, directly and unambiguously. The event was unsafe and unprofessional, and we communicated that very directly in a calm and consistent way. And the comment that is pretty important, I think, that was made on Tuesday. The Navy Chief Vice Admiral Mark Hammond was asked about this, and I know that the Leader of the Opposition, I would hope, has respect for the Chief of Navy in Australia. And this is what he said. The government has raised this very effectively. I'm very comfortable with the way the government's dealt with it.
Order, order, members on my left. Order. The Leader of the Opposition will cease interjecting so I can hear from order, so I can hear from the member for McNamara.
Thank you very much, Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Housing. How will the Albanese Labor Government's Help to Buy scheme help support more Australians into home ownership, and what is standing in its way?
Order. I give the call to the Minister for Housing, Homelessness and Small Business.
You couldn't get a phone call.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker. And I do want to thank the member for McNamara for that important question. I know that he's very supportive of our ambitious housing agenda, and indeed he is concerned about the housing challenges that Australia faces today. Help to Buy will be life-changing for tens of thousands of Australians. The legislation I introduced today will provide a pathway to home ownership for people who have been locked out. Particularly, it will help low- and middle-income Australians get over the hurdle of a deposit and enjoy ongoing savings thanks to smaller repayments.
Hear, hear.
Eligible participants will only need a 2% deposit for Help to Buy. The government will support them with an equity stake of up to 40% for new homes and up to 30% for existing homes. Help to Buy will help more than 40,000 Australians into home ownership.
The member for Deakin will cease interjecting.
We're providing this support, Mr. Speaker, because we understand what buying a house means to Australians. It's security, it's stability, it's the great Australian dream. It's something everyone in this place should be able to support. But, Mr. Speaker, disappointingly today, we saw those opposite team up with the Greens again to delay this life-changing legislation. 5 months, Mr. Speaker, of delays for people
order.
Wanting the stability and the security of owning their own home. This delay shows
order.
That, yet again,
members
the Leader
left.
Of the Opposition has nothing positive to offer the country. The Opposition voted against cost of living relief when Australians are doing it tough, and now they're teaming up with the Greens to delay help for home buyers. That, over there, they
order.
Talk a big game on home ownership, Mr. Speaker, but now they're teaming up with the Greens yet again to stand in the way of Australians who want to own their own home. We want to help more Australians
order.
Buy a home. The only thing they want to buy
member
is more
right.
time to grandstand. We want to open the door to more Australians owning a home, but they just want to slam it shut, Mr Speaker. We want to give Australians the keys to a new home. They just want to lock them out. Right. Mr Speaker, those opposite have said no to more social and affordable housing. They've said no to cost of living relief. And now, unbelievably, they're saying no to more home ownership for Australians that want to get into a home.
Order.
We know what a difference Help to Buy will make, but we won't stop working hard so that more Australians have a safe, affordable place to call home. We want to help more Australians with the housing support they need, more help for home buyers, more
order.
Help for renters, and more help for Australians who need a safe place to call home.
Before I call the Leader of the Nationals, I'm pleased to inform the House that present in the Special Visitors Gallery today are representatives of the European Commission, including the Vice President of the Commission, His Excellency Margaritis Skinnis, Member of the EU Cabinet, Ms Maria Tukankopoulou, and the EU Ambassador to Australia, His Excellency Mr Gabriel Visitan. Welcome to you all. Give the call to the Leader of the Nationals.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. My question is to the Prime Minister. Prime Minister, Australians are facing a cost of living crisis. The government has wasted $450 million on the Prime Minister's voice referendum, $250 million on monitoring hardcore criminals who did not need to be released. So will the Prime Minister rule out wasting
Order. Members on my right, the Minister for Skills and Training is warned.
Shouldn't have let him out, was the question.
Order. Order.
No, they came in by boat.
The questions are going to be heard in silence. Just as they were on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, today, they're all going to be heard in silence. So the Minister for Skills is warned. If anyone else interjects, they'll be warned. I have to hear the question. The Leader of the Nationals will begin his question again.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. My question is to the Prime Minister. Prime Minister, Australians are facing a cost of living crisis. The government has wasted $450 million on the Prime Minister's voice referendum, $250 million on monitoring hardcore criminals who did not need to be released. So will the Prime Minister rule out wasting more taxpayers' money on creating up to 53 new federal politicians and 200 or more staff who would come with them?
Order. Members on my left will cease interjecting. The member for Barker will cease interjecting. The Minister for Home Affairs. Order. Members on my left will cease interjecting immediately. The question was heard in silence. The Prime Minister will also be given the same courtesy, and he has the call.
I thank the Leader of the National Party for his question, which goes to an attack on the existence of politicians. And the suggestion... Let me say this. The suggestion that some politicians are a waste of money, I think he's right. I think he's right, Mr Speaker. Because what you could have over there... What you could have over there is one of those buttons that you can
have. The Leader of the Nationals has asked his question.
You get these buttons, Mr Speaker, and you press them and they just say no in different ways. No. You set them all up there and no matter what the legislation was, you press the button and there it'll be no.
Mr Speaker, you
know that you've really hit the bottom of the barrel when it comes to desperation, when you have a politician who's the leader of a political party thinking that it's okay to just say, oh, we want less politicians. We want less politicians. Less
order.
Politicians.
Order.
This is the mob.
Leader of the Nationals.
This is the mob, Mr Speaker, who across the Liberal and the National Party, they recently had the largest international parliamentary delegation since Federation. 15 of them, Mr Speaker, 15 of them went to a conference in London. The member for Cook, Hume, New England, Wannon, Fairfax, Mallee,
order.
Cowan,
Member Page.
Or Bowman, Barara, Canning, Groom. That's before you get to
order.
The senators.
The Prime Minister will pause. Order. Members on my right. Order. I'd like to hear... Order. I'd like to hear the Leader of the Nationals on his point of order.
A point of order on relevance, Mr Speaker. The question was very tight about whether the Prime Minister...
Resume your seat. Resume your seat. I don't think anyone could argue that question was tight. It contained the following. It contained the following. Order. I'll deal with the point of order. It contained the following issues of the cost of living on the referendum about immigration and also the issue of new politicians and the cost that comes from that. Order. Prime Minister has 1 minute to continue on about the broad-ranging nature of that question.
Mr Speaker.
Order. The Prime Minister has
almost as many people as they have in their shadow cabinet at this cooker fest, they're in London. They're in London.
Order.
And what was it about?
Order.
What was it about? The Alliance for Responsible Citizenship, paid for by billionaires and global hedge funds.
Order. The Prime Minister
paid for
will
by
pause. Prime Minister will pause. Order. Order. The Deputy Leader of the Opposition will cease objecting. I can't hear a word that's being said. If this level continues, another general warning will be issued and people won't be here today as well. Okay? Prime Minister has the call.
Thanks, Mr Speaker. A conference about the future with guest speakers John Howard, who went along to say multiculturalism is a concept that I've always had trouble with.
Order.
And Tony Abbott saying that climate change was both ahistorical and utterly
Order.
Implausible. Peddled by a climate cult.
The Leader of the Nationals has asked his question.
They went all that way to bag multiculturalism and to bag climate change.
Order. Members on my right will cease interjecting, as will members on my left. Order. When the the member for Hume and the Leader of the Nationals. I'm just going to wait till the House settles. And the Minister for Climate Change and Energy is not assisting. I'd like to hear from the member for Holt.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. My question is to the Prime Minister. How will the government's Help to Buy legislation ensure more Australian families can buy a home? And what is standing in the way of getting this done?
Give a call to the Prime Minister.
Thanks very much, Mr Speaker. And I'm glad to get a question about policy from this side of the House, Mr Speaker.
Order.
Because our Help to Buy scheme will help more families achieve the Great Australian Scheme, the Dream. What it is a shared equity scheme.
Order.
A shared equity scheme that will assist some 40,000 families on low and moderate incomes buy a home with as little as a 2% deposit. And we know that programs like this have worked very effectively in Western Australia. We know that the former New South Wales Coalition government introduced a similar scheme. In Victoria, they produced a similar scheme as well, because it's all about getting people into home ownership. And it's a part of our comprehensive plan on housing. And what we saw earlier this year, of course, was with our Housing Australia Future Fund, a coalition of the Liberals, the Nationals, the Greens and One Nation, all combined to defer a scheme that should have begun on the 1st of July, providing support for more investment
Order.
In public housing. But they opposed it and they kept deferring it once, they deferred it twice, and eventually, enough crossbenchers decided that they would support the program, but it was delayed. Those opposite held the line, to be fair. They were consistent. They're just against public housing.
That's right.
Against public housing, as they're against anything when it comes to the public, public transport, public health, public education. They're just against it. They're just against the public over
Order.
There. We know that's their position. But I would have thought maybe there was a chance that they were in favour of home ownership, but apparently not. Apparently not. Because the Senate has made a decision to defer consideration of the Help to Buy scheme, not for a month, not for 2 months, not for 3 months, but not even for 4 months, but for 5 months.
Order.
From November right through to April. Right through to April.
Member for Deakin.
And once again, what we have is this coalition, a coalition of people saying no. The same group that came together to oppose investment in social housing have come together to oppose support
Order,
for home ownership.
Groom.
Well, we will continue to advocate our comprehensive agenda when it comes to housing. It's a comprehensive agenda to increase the number of homes in Australia by 1.2 million and to have a plan both for social housing but also to assist people into owning their own
Order.
Home.
Prime Minister's time is concluded. Well, the member for Lyons. Here from the leader of the Australian Greens.
Thanks, Speaker. My question is to the Prime Minister. The first job of government is to keep people safe, and today's climate statement reinforces the enormous threat of the climate crisis to Australia's national security. So why is Labor backing the massive Beetaloo, Barossa, Scarborough, Browse and Narrabri gas projects that will fast-track climate collapse? With today's figures showing emissions rising this year under Labor, rising, why is Labor opening new coal and gas projects and making Australia's people less safe?
We call to the Minister for Energy and Climate Change.
Well, thanks very much, Mr. Speaker. I thank the honourable member for his question. And of course, today the government did release the annual climate change statement, which is a requirement under the Climate Change Act passed by this government and this parliament. And of course, I released the latest projections, which show we are now on track to achieve a 42% emissions reduction by 2030. Up from 40% last year and getting close to our 43% target. But we've more to do. With 72 months
Order.
Between now and 2030, it is a big lift. A big lift, Mr. Speaker. But we are pleased with the progress we've made so far. We're pleased with the fact that projections are now on track to come down by 43%. Now, the honourable member asks about the need for new gas and other approvals.
Order.
I'll make this point, Mr. Speaker. We also released the Climate Change Authority advice today. One of the recommendations of the Climate Change Authority advice was to ensure adequate gas supply to gas-fired power stations as part of this transmission, a recommendation we accept and are implementing, Mr. Speaker. Yeah. That's why we brought down the gas code to ensure that new gas is enabled for domestic supply, not international exports. This is the code the Greens sought to disallow. Now, Mr. Speaker, the Greens' gas campaign died the day they moved to disallow that gas code. It actually died that moment because their credibility went down the gurgler at that point. We know that because they moved the code. The no position didn't know what to do. They didn't turn up. They moved the disallowance. Who turned up to vote for them? Senator Canavan, One Nation Party and Senator Babbitt, the coalition of craziness. I mean, this is the degree of sophistication the Greens political party has brought to this debate. Yes, we need to ensure an adequate supply of gas to the gas-fired power stations to underpin this most important economic transformation. The honourable member talks about coal. We continue to need metallurgical coal in particular, Mr. Speaker. In particular, I've got to say we need more steel for this transition than ever before. Transmission towers can't be built by paper mache. It just can't be done. We need more steel across the world, and including Australia, and that requires coking coal while we're waiting for green steel to come on. All this is part of the important economic transformation. We will continue to manage getting emissions down and jobs up. Slogans do not get emissions down. They do not get jobs up. Paddling around Newcastle Harbour does not get emissions down and does not get jobs up. Good policy gets emissions down and jobs up, and that's what the Albanese government will continue to deliver.
Give a call to the honourable member for Lawler.
Thank you, Speaker. My question is to the Treasurer. How is the Albanese Labor government's responsible economic management helping in the fight against inflation, and what approaches have been rejected?
Give the call to the Treasurer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thanks to my great friend, the member for Lawler, for her important question. Mr. Speaker, we've got a long way to go in this fight against inflation, but in the last
order,
day
the
or two—
Order. The Treasurer will pause. The member for Deakin has been once again interjecting right throughout question time. He's warned. The Treasurer has the call.
Thank you, Speaker. We've got a long way to go in this fight against inflation, but in the last day or two, we've received some glowing endorsements of the inflation-fighting plan that is key to our approach to the economy. We are making encouraging and welcome progress in the fight against inflation, Order. Even as we recognise that people are still doing it tough. Our strategy is responsible cost of living relief to take the edge off cost of living pressures without adding to inflation. It's budget repair and it's investing in the supply side of the economy. And as I said, Mr. Speaker, this has received some glowing endorsements in the last day or two. Overnight, the OECD talked about the importance of our energy plan to taking some of the edge off electricity prices. Deloitte Access Economics talked about the importance of our fiscal strategy overnight in this fight against inflation. Westpac, the economist there, said that our policies are putting downward pressure on inflation. Yesterday, the ABS made it clear in their data release that our policies are taking the edge off electricity and rent and in other ways, Mr. Speaker. The IMF, that not that long ago, said that our budget strategy is helping in the fight against inflation. When Fitch reaffirmed our AAA, they said that our fiscal policy is working with monetary policy in important and helpful ways. And when the Reserve Bank Governor was asked that estimates about our budget strategy, she said it was very helpful when it comes to the fight against inflation. Now, Mr. Speaker, government policy is not the only reason why inflation is moderating, but it is an important reason why inflation is moderating, and all of these people who've backed in our strategy have made that clear. It's a key reason why the monthly inflation number came down from 5.6 to 4.9. It's a key reason why quarterly inflation, when it was 2.1 under them, is almost half that now at 1.2. Trim mean under them, inflation 1.5 in March before the election. It's 1.2 now. That's a hint for the Shadow Treasurer. 1.2 is smaller than 1.5, genius.
Order.
And so, Mr. Speaker, I say to the House, we're not getting carried away by the improvement in inflation. We know there's a long way to go. We know people are still doing it tough. But our policies are clearly helping, and others are making that very clear. The other thing that's clear, Mr. Speaker, is if they had their way, electricity prices would be higher, rent would be higher, inflation would be higher, and wages would be lower. We're working for Australia, Mr. Speaker. Our budget strategy is making welcome progress in this fight against inflation. As we work to clean up the mess that those opposite left behind, the Shadow Treasurer was given an opportunity to sketch out an alternative today, and he didn't have one.
The Treasurer's time has concluded. Just before I call the member for Wannon, he will get the call. I'm pleased to inform the House that present in the gallery is a parliamentary delegation from the Federal Democratic Republic of Nepal, led by the chairperson of the National Assembly, the Right Honourable Ganesh Prasad Timilsena. And in the gallery today are participants and course conveners of the Australia Awards Short Course on Foreign Policy run in Indonesia. A warm welcome to you all. Give the call to the member for Wannon.
Thanks, Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Immigration. Why did the government tell the High Court that there was no real prospect of the plaintiff being removed from Australia in the reasonably foreseeable future when it hadn't yet made inquiries of relevant countries that may have accepted his deportation? Isn't it the case if the government was doing its job and had not made this error, the now 142 hardened criminals
Order.
Would not have been released into the Australian community?
Order. The Order. Members on my right, the Minister for Home Affairs will cease interjecting. The Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs has the call.
Thank you, Speaker, and I thank the Shadow Minister for his question. The government vigorously argued that the previous immigration detention settings were constitutionally valid and that those settings authorised the continued detention of the plaintiff.
Order. 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 Members on my left. Order. The member for Barker will cease interjecting. Order. Members on my left, when the House comes to order, I'll hear from the member for Fraser.
My question is to the Minister for Employment and Workplace Relations. How is the Albanese Labor government working to get wages moving again after a decade of wages being kept deliberately low?
Give a call to the Minister for Employment and Workplace Relations and the Minister for the Arts.
Thanks very much, Speaker, and thanks to the member for Fraser, someone who every time he's had the chance to vote to get wages moving, he's done exactly that. Yesterday, the House passed a bill which will close the labour hire loophole, which will give casual workers a fair deal, which will provide minimum standards for gig workers, and which will make wage theft a crime. And we know that this government has made a difference to getting wages moving. If you only look at some of the impacts that are already emerging from last year's legislation, take an article we saw this week from David Marin Guzman in the Financial Review about 19-year-old Billabong employee Sarah Strebus. Under a decade-old enterprise agreement, where to get rid of it they had to use the laws that we passed last year, but under that, until that was able to be changed because of our legal changes, that worker received no Saturday penalty rates, no evening penalty rates, Sunday and public holiday rates as much as $10 an hour below the award. She was 19 years of age and had already been underpaid by more than $800. We changed the law and she's now being properly paid.
Order.
We know this government's getting wages moving because the latest wage growth data at 4% compares with their average of 2.1%. We know that aged care workers have had a 15% pay rise. We know that the increases to award rates, 4.6% and 5.75%, way beyond what happened under the previous government. We know this government gets wages moving because the gender pay gap is now at its lowest level ever. And when it was made clear that this government, if we were elected, would get wages moving, was when the Prime Minister was asked a question about the minimum wage and he answered with one word, absolutely. Does this government support higher wages for those on the minimum wage? Absolutely. Does this government support higher wages for people on awards? Absolutely. Did we support higher wages for aged care workers? Absolutely. Have we backed higher wages for women? Absolutely. Are we about ending the Labor hire rip-offs? Absolutely. Are we voting to give minimum standards for gig workers? Absolutely. Are we working to give casual workers a fair go? Absolutely. And unlike those opposite, will we make it a criminal offence to steal from a worker's wages? Absolutely.
Order. When the House comes to order, I'll hear from the honourable member for Wannan.
Thanks, Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Immigration. The Minister has told the Parliament that the High Court's decision meant that, quote, every person required to be released by order of the High Court was so released. In fact, the High Court only directed the release of the plaintiff NZYQ in that case. The decision to release the others was a decision made by the government in advance of the reasons being handed down based on what is expected.
The member will pause, because I'm going to ask him to state the question again, because there is far too much noise from the Minister for Home Affairs and members on my right. Same rules apply to everyone. Questions are going to be heard in silence. It's not a free-for-all. You don't give commentary during questions. If you want to comment during the answer, well, go right ahead. But for my job, I have to listen to the questions. So the member for Wannan will state his question again.
My question is to the Minister for Immigration. The Minister has told the Parliament that the High Court's decision meant that, quote, every person required to be released by order of the High Court was so released, end quote. In fact, the High Court only directed the release of the plaintiff, NZYQ, in that case. The decision to release the others was a decision made by the government in advance of the reasons being handed down based on what is expected the High Court to say. Isn't it the case that the minister has misled the parliament?
Order. Order. Members on my right, the Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs has the call.
Thank you very much, Speaker, and I thank the Shadow Minister for that extraordinary question. Let me be very, very, very clear. The High Court, in its decision, required the release of individuals in similar circumstances to the plaintiff, NZYQ, the government had to comply with this, as any government would, as any government would. And the opposition's claims to the contrary, including those of the Shadow Attorney General, a former First Law officer of this country, are baseless, wrong and frankly unworthy. Now, a former Attorney General, not from this side of politics, had this to say. And I think his comments are worth listening to. Former Senator Brandis: "I have not disguised my concern at attacks upon the institutions of the law, the courts and those who practice in them. To attack those institutions is to attack the rule of law itself."
Order.
He went on to say in his remarks and valedictory, "It's for the Attorney General to always defend the rule of law, sometimes from political colleagues who fail to understand it or are impatient of the limitations it may impose on executive power." That is a very apt comment now, and members opposite should have regard to it, and they should be ashamed.
The member for Sturt will cease interjecting. And the House comes to order. I'll hear from the member for Barker is now warned. I want to hear from the member for Boothby.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister for the Environment and Water. How is the Albanese Labor government delivering on its promise to protect the Murray-Darling River base as river system and every Australian who depends on it? What has the government had to overcome?
Give the call to the Minister for the Environment and Water.
Thanks so much, Mr. Speaker, and thank you so much to the member for Boothby for that question. I know that as a proud South Australian, she is absolutely committed to seeing the Murray mouth open to the sea and water flowing right through the Murray-Darling Basin system. For the 3 million Australians that rely on this river system for their drinking water.
Order.
For the 2.3 million people who live in the basin, and for the industry, the farmers, the First Nations peoples, the towns, the communities that depend on this water, this is a very important day. Of course, we need to make sure that our rivers have enough water in them for the driest periods, and we know that another drought is approaching. It's really interesting to hear the interjections and the hostility from those opposite. They are in a complete bind on this, because on the one hand they keep saying that they support the Murray-Darling Basin Plan, but with every word and every action they have opposed the delivery of this plan. You have senators like Senator Rustin saying, "We will not give up, we will not stop trying, because we are committed to the delivery of the plan." We've got Senator Birmingham saying that they'll deliver the plan in full and on—
The minister will pause. Member Barker was on a warning and is a quick learner. It's good to see. The order. The House will come to order. Question was heard in silence. The minister will also be given the same courtesy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We had the member for Sturt and Senator McLaughlin just weeks ago saying that they support buybacks and support the 450 gigalitres being delivered. And yet, at every opportunity, they have voted against it. We had the member for Sturt voting against the delivery of the Murray-Darling Basin Plan today.
The Deputy Leader of the Opposition is now warned. So that means, just pause, Minister, if the Deputy Leader Opposition continues to inject, she won't be here for question time either. She's going to have silence for the remainder of this answer. The Minister has the call.
Thank you. And I'm not really sure what's worse, the member for Sturt voting against the interests of his community, the community he represents, or Senators McLaughlin and Antic, who were too gutless to turn up and vote either way in the Senate. So, Mr. Speaker, today is a very important day for the delivery of the Murray-Darling Basin Plan. We achieved a lot when we were last in government. Communities worked hard to achieve the outcomes in that Murray-Darling Basin plan, and then for 10 years we were on a go-slow. For 10 years nothing happened. Today, with the passing of this legislation, the Murray-Darling Basin plan is back on track. It's important for communities and it's great for the environment.
Give a call to the Honourable the Leader of the Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr Speaker. I seek leave to move the following motion. The House expresses its grave concern
order.
That one, the Albanese Minister government's...
The order, the Minister for Infrastructure, the Minister for Industry, the Minister for Communications will all cease interjecting. The member for McEwen will also cease. The Leader of the Opposition is going to be heard in silence when he reads this out.
Very much, Mr Speaker. I seek leave to move the following motion. The House, one, expresses its grave concern that A, the Albanese government's catastrophic handling of the NZYQ High Court case has resulted in the mass release of hardened criminals from detention into the Australian community. B, the government released child rapists, murderers, sex offenders, people smugglers, drug dealers and outlaw motorcycle gang members.
Order.
C.
Order.
Many of these criminals are repeat offenders and are almost certain to re-offend. D. The Minister for Immigration has now released 142 highly dangerous individuals when the High Court's full reasons make clear he was only required to release the applicant NZYQ.
Order.
E. The Minister for Immigration's agreement in May that there was no real prospect of NZYQ being removed from Australia in the reasonably foreseeable future was made before all resettlement options had been exhausted and led directly to the loss of the case. Wow. F. The Minister of Immigration claimed these criminals were on visas with strict conditions and then later admitted those conditions were completely unenforceable. G. The Minister for Immigration lost one of those dangerous criminals for a week and refuses to take responsibility or to explain how this happened. And H, the Minister for Immigration claimed no legislative response was required and to this day is having to be forcibly spoon-fed new laws by the Coalition. Two, condemns the Albanese government for A, causing the greatest failure in Australia's immigration system since 50,000 people, including NZYQ, arrived on more than 800 boats under Labor. B, catastrophically failing to prepare for a High Court case decision despite having almost 6 months of warning. C, failing at every step following the court's decision to take the action necessary to keep Australians safe. And D, putting Australian lives at risk by undertaking a chaotic and uncontrolled mass release of hardened criminals into our community. Three, calls on the Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs to resign, or for the Prime Minister to enforce accountability and to sack him.
Order. Members on my right. Order. Members on my right. The Minister for Home Affairs, the Assistant Minister for Foreign Affairs. Just going to go through this in a systematic way. Is leave granted?
No, Mr Speaker, he's got the MPI. He can deliver the exact same speech.
All right. Leave is not granted. Order. Leave is not granted. Give a call to the Leader of the Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr Speaker. I move that so much of the standing orders be suspended as would prevent the Leader of the Opposition from moving the following motion.
Order.
The House, one, expresses its grave concern that the Albanese government's catastrophic handling of the NZYQ High Court case has resulted in the mass release of hardened criminals from detention into the Australian community. B, the government released child rapists, murderers,
order.
Sex offenders,
members
people smugglers,
right.
Drug dealers and outlaw motorcycle gang members. C, many of these criminals are repeat offenders and are almost certain to offend again. D, the Minister for Immigration has now released 142 highly dangerous individuals when the High Court's full reasons make clear he was only required to release the applicant NZYQ. E, the Minister for Immigration's agreement in May that there was no real prospect of NZYQ being removed from Australia in the reasonably foreseeable future was made before all resettlement options had been exhausted and led directly to the loss of the case.
Order.
F, the Minister for Immigration claimed these criminals were on visas with strict conditions and then later admitted that those conditions were completely unenforceable. G, the Minister for Immigration lost one of those dangerous criminals for a week and refuses to take responsibility or to explain how this happened. And H, the Minister for Immigration claimed no legislative response was required and to this day is having to be forcibly spoon-fed new laws by the Coalition. 2, condemns the Albanese government for A, causing the greatest failure of Australia's immigration system, since 50,000 people, including NZYQ, arrived on more than 800 boats under Labor. B, catastrophically failing to prepare for a High Court decision despite having almost 6 months' warning. C, failing at every step following the Court's decision to take the action necessary to keep Australians safe. And D, putting Australian lives at risk by undertaking a chaotic and uncontrolled mass release of hardened criminals into the community. 3, calls on the Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs to resign or for the Prime Minister to enforce accountability and to sack him. Mr Speaker, it's telling this Prime Minister won't stand up to defend a hapless minister that is making Australian—
Order. Give him the Leader of the House.
I require that this be dealt with as the first item of business after the MPI, which I expect will be the same speech.
We will move to the next question. I'll give the call to the honourable member for Pearce.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Home Affairs. What steps is the Albanese Labor government taking to resolve the issues created by the High Court's decision in NZYQ? And is the minister aware of any opposition to these approaches? Thank you.
Give the call to the order. Give a call to the Minister for Home Affairs and the Minister for Cybersecurity.
Thank you, Speaker. And we have seen two very different approaches across the parliament since the NZYQ decision. And we just saw that on display with that truly pathetic attempt, that truly pathetic stunt to again politicise what our government regards as a serious national security concern for the country. Now, Speaker, at every turn, in the way the government has handled this matter, we have focused on one thing and one thing only, and that is the safety of the Australian community. Meanwhile, what we have seen is constant
order.
And pathetic attempts—
I'll ask the minister to pause. I'm just going to ask the member for right to resume his seat. The minister in continuation.
What we've seen, Speaker, is a deep contrast with the opposition, who have tried at every turn to duck and weave and find some way to make politics out of this decision. Now, Speaker, you would think that the work that our government has tried to undertake to protect the community would be supported across the chamber. But we have seen and heard some absolutely extraordinary things in the last 3 weeks. On Monday, Speaker, we saw the opposition, led by the Leader of the Opposition, come into the chamber and vote to protect paedophiles over children. That's what they did. They came in here and, instead of supporting Labor's attempts to criminalise paedophiles who loiter near daycare centres and schools, the Leader of the Opposition came in here and played politics instead. And that wasn't it, Speaker, because the work that the government was doing with that bill was not just about protecting children from paedophiles. It was also doing things like criminalising people who are violent domestic abusers from contacting their victims. Speaker, how could the opposition not support that? And yet, for politics and politics only, they came into the chamber and voted against it.
The minister will pause. The member for Fadden is on a warning. When that means you don't interject. So you'll leave the chamber under 94A. Same with anyone else on a warning. Just the members for Barker, Deakin, the Deputy Leader of the Opposition, the member for Page and the Minister for Skills and Training. Minister has the call.
But, Speaker, that wasn't it. It wasn't it that we saw the opposition come in and try to support paedophiles over children and support domestic abusers over their survivor victims. What we have also seen this week is an unspeakable lack of leadership from the Leader of the Opposition in calling to attention the behaviour of one of his frontbenchers.
The Minister will pause. The Minister will pause. There's far too much noise. We're going to just do this one at a time. The Minister will pause. Well, this goes to the issue that I can't hear because there is far too much noise. I understand there's an issue at hand and I'll deal with it. So give the call on a point of order to the member for Deakin.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker. I request that you demand the minister withdraw that disgusting slur that she's repeated on a number of occasions. It is below contempt that the minister, in an attempt to protect herself, would throw disgusting smears
order,
like
resume
that.
Resume your seat. Resume your seat. Order. Order. On the point of order, I'll hear from the Leader of the House.
As a precedent as to why this should be in order, when Speaker Smith was Speaker, a member referring to the then Shadow Attorney General said this quote, "He stands up instead for the criminal." It was considered to be in order. The person who made that statement is now the Leader of the Opposition.
The motion.
Look, order, order. I'm just going to ask all members and ministers. Oh, the member for Deakin, on the point of order, the member for Deakin.
It's a clear reflection on members. Protecting pedophiles is something that should not come out of any minister's mouth.
Order. Members on my right. Members on my right. The Leader of the House on the point of order.
To the point of order, Mr. Speaker. It's extraordinary we're having this discussion after the motion that was just moved. And beyond that, what the minister referred to was the impact of a vote that members took. Exactly. She has precisely described the impact of that vote.
With respect, order, order. 2 points I want to make on this. First of all, before this moment occurred, I just addressed the House and said there was far too much noise and there were people on warnings. If you want me to hear things of everything that is said, it's really simple. Don't interject. I'm going to ask the minister to make sure her language is tempered and to make sure that she is not reflecting upon members. At the same time, I'm going to ask all members to reflect on their behaviours and standards that have been occurring this week. The Leader of the Opposition.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I would ask that you request the minister to withdraw the reflection that was made on members on this side of the House. As I said before, with all respect to you, I don't believe it's an issue, frankly, that needed to be drawn to your attention because I was anticipating your ruling and I would ask that you rule accordingly.
The Minister for Aged Care, the Leader of the House.
Mr. Speaker, only a moment ago, the Leader of the Opposition, this is to the point of order, the Leader of the Opposition took a decision that had been made by the High Court, not by the government, and then made reflections on the government with respect to, and I quote, child rapists, murderers, people smugglers, drug dealers, outlaw motorcycle members. Now that goes further. That goes further than anything that the minister just said. So, if there's going to be, and I'd say there ought not be a withdrawal from the minister, but there are about 7 or 8 withdrawals that would immediately have to happen from someone with a glass jaw who
order.
Can dish
resume
it out but can't take it.
Resume your seat. Resume your seat. Order. Order. On the point of order, the Leader of the Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, to the point of order and the point that the Leader
order.
Of the House raised, to quote what I said, and in context, this is the direct quote of the words I used in the motion, and it reads as follows. The government released child rapists, murderers, sex offenders, people smugglers, drug dealers and outlaw motorcycle gang members. That
order.
Is a statement of
order.
Fact, Mr. Speaker, a statement of fact.
Order. Look. Order. Members on my... No. Members on my right. Members on my right will cease interjecting. The House will come to order. The member for McEwen will cease interjecting. On the point of order, Member for Deakin.
Thanks very much, Mr. Speaker. At present, without a withdrawal, every single member on this side of the House is accused of protecting pedophiles. Think about that. Think about that. Think about that. Now,
order,
Mr. Speaker,
members on my right,
Mr. Speaker,
the Minister for Early Childhood Education.
It would be extraordinary that that would be allowed in this chamber, and I request again that the
order.
Minister not only withdraw but apologise.
Order. There is far too much temperature in this chamber today and all week. Order. That means everyone stop interjecting right now. To assist the House, I am going to ask the Minister to withdraw, but I'm going to remind all members moving forward from this moment the same will apply when motions, questions are put forward. The same principles will apply. I put up with a lot this week, but that's the right of members to say what they wish. But moving forward now, the same standards will apply with motions, questions and comments in the chamber. I'm going to ask the Minister to assist the House to withdraw, and we'll move forward.
Speaker, to assist the House, I withdraw.
Minister, in continuation.
Speaker, it's important that all of us in this chamber are accountable for our actions. And whether that comment stands or not, the facts show the record. And the record is that a bill that Labor put forward to criminalise paedophiles standing in front of schools, the Leader of the Opposition and his team voted against. And you cannot hide from that. You cannot hide from that. And it's not the only example of this type of conduct, Speaker, because we have had a deafening silence from the Leader of the Opposition about the behaviour of a hand-picked member of his front bench, Senator Dean Smith, who chose to use his power to argue that a paedophile get released from immigration detention. And I would say to the Leader of the Opposition,
order.
He likes to get up and speak emotionally about child sexual abuse. He's got an opportunity to make a stand, and I want him to do it.
Order. The House comes to order. I'll give the call to the member for North Sydney.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Infrastructure, Transport, Regional Development and Local Government. In April this year, you issued a media release saying your government would announce its proposed fuel efficiency standards by the end of the year. Then when I asked about the exact timeline for these standards in May this year, Minister Bowen said you and he had opened a consultation process and that it would take 6 weeks to get the detail right. That was more than 6 months ago. Today, Greenpeace released figures showing Australian motorists would have saved $10.1 billion in avoided petrol costs if a fuel efficiency standard had been introduced in 2016. Minister, when will the proposed fuel efficiency standards be
order.
Released?
Order. I'm just going to call to the Minister for Infrastructure, Regional Development and Local Government.
Thank you very much to the member for her question. Of course, this government does want Australian households and businesses to reap the benefits of modern, cheaper to run, low emission cars. We know that they will save consumers right the way across the country, including in regional Australia, money in fuel. Australia is next to Russia, as you know, as one of the only advanced economies without fuel efficiency standards. We have the previous government, frankly, to thank for that embarrassing legacy. That is why the government is committed to introducing fuel efficiency standards, as we have said previously. We have a real opportunity in this country to save consumers money at the bowser while assisting Australians to reduce its carbon emissions. Fuel efficiency standards, we know, will incentivise an increase in EV supply while also incentivising vehicle manufacturers to supply more fuel-efficient and cheaper to run cars to our market. As we continue to develop the standards, and I welcome the member's question in relation to this, it is important that we are working with community and with industry to make sure that we get this right, and we are finalising the details, and we'll have more to say about that in the near future.
Give a call to the honourable member for Robertson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And my question is to the Minister for Health. How are the Albanese Labor government's actions to strengthen Medicare helping Australians access the health care they need while relieving cost of living pressures? And why is the government so determined to strengthen Medicare after a decade of cuts and neglect?
Call to the Minister for Health and Aged Care.
Thank you, Speaker.
The member for Robertson's, this talented young emergency physician who decided to pause his promising medical career to run for Parliament and deliver better healthcare services for his community on the Central Coast. And on this side of Parliament, we count ourselves so lucky that he took that decision, because working shifts every day in the Wyong Hospital and the Gosford Hospital, he saw shift after shift the consequences of 10 years of cuts and neglect to Medicare under those opposite. And he argued, for example, for the reversal of the decision that the former government made to cut the ability of general practices in the Central Coast and the Hunter Valley to recruit overseas trained doctors, a decision that hollowed out general practices right through that Central Coast and Hunter Valley community. And that's why we did reverse that decision. And that decision came on top of a six-year freeze to the Medicare rebate, a freeze that was kicked off by the Leader of the Opposition when he was the Health Minister, because he could not get his infamous GP tax through the Senate. Well, the Labor's approach, the member for Robertson's approach, could not be more different than the approach of the Leader of the Opposition. While he tried to abolish bulk billing altogether and make every single Australian pay a fee every single time they visited the doctor, in the May budget we tripled the bulk billing incentive, the biggest ever investment in bulk billing in Australia's history, and one that's particularly important for the Central Coast in New South Wales, which has one of the lowest bulk billing rates in the country, Mr Speaker. But the member for Robertson also promised his community a Medicare urgent care clinic to make it easier to see a doctor for one of those urgent, non-life-threatening emergencies, but also to take the pressure off those local hospitals he'd been working in as an emergency physician. And he delivered on that promise, because the Peninsula Urgent Care Clinic is now open 7 days a week, extended hours, fully bulk billed, delivering services to the people of his community. And it's already making a difference, Mr Speaker. Christine sent a message to Dr Gordon Reid, said, "I want to thank you so much for your work in providing the Peninsula Medicare Urgent Care Clinic. Our son had a red, swollen spider bite and was able to see a doctor after work this afternoon straight away." And he got an emoji too, Mr Speaker, a trophy emoji and a golden star emoji as well. Ginny took her son in at 8:30 a.m. on a day, got him seen within 15 minutes, fully bulk billed. Also thank their local member, because he is a terrific member for Robertson, who supports our campaign to strengthen Medicare, tripling the bulk billing incentive, rolling out urgent care clinics and delivering cheaper medicines.
I give the call to the Honourable the Deputy Leader of the Opposition.
My question is to the Minister for Immigration. The government brought forward legislation which it said would address the impact of the recent High Court decision. Why did that legislation fail to include a prohibition on pedophiles released by the government being allowed to go near a school or childcare centre? Why did that legislation fail to include a prohibition on violent criminals being allowed to have contact with and threaten their victims? Why was this legislation so weak?
Order. Give the call to the Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs.
Thank you, Speaker, and I thank the Deputy Leader of the Liberal Party for her question, although perhaps it's a question she could have addressed to herself as someone who voted for the legislation. And while she's answering that, she could also ask herself this question. Why did she, not once but twice, vote against a bill which passed the House this week which did exactly that? What a joke.
Order. Give the call to the Honourable Member for Parramatta.
Thank you, Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Skills and Training. How many Australians have been able to enrol in high-quality education and training for free, thanks to the Albanese Labor government? And how is this helping solve the massive skills deficit left by the previous government?
Call to the Minister for Skills and Training.
Thank you, Speaker. Can I thank the member for Parramatta for his question, because he fully understands how important it is to educate workers and students in this country to ensure we have a productive and efficient labour market and economy, and that's what we're doing, investing in education and training in our way. And as, of course, I've said before in this place, upon coming to office,
We inherited one of the deepest and broadest skill shortages we'd seen. In fact, the deepest and broadest skill shortage in 5 decades. It didn't matter where you looked across the economy, there were shortages. It was for that reason that the Prime Minister and the Treasurer convened a Jobs and Skills Summit, bringing together industry, universities, the vet sector, state and territory governments. And of course, the first announcement was to ensure 180,000 fee-free TAFE places. Well, I'm happy to inform the House that we've smashed that target. There are now almost 300,000 Australians enrolled in fee-free TAFE this year. 296,107 Australians are enrolled in fee-free TAFE and vet courses for this year, providing the skills that we need in sectors of our economy. 65,000 of those enrollees are in the age, disability and care sector. We have 26,000 in the tech and digital sector. We have indeed 21,000 in construction, 14,000 in early childhood education, 12,000 in agriculture, 11,000 in hospitality and tourism. 60% of those enrollees are women. More than one-third of the courses that we're delivering are in regional Australia, which is critical for our communities within the region. So this is a remarkable achievement by the state and territory governments working with the Albanese government to deliver the skills that we need in this country. And that's why it's so hard to fathom why the opposition oppose this initiative, why they attack it and call it a waste of spending, why the leader of the opposition will not support workers who need these skills, why he doesn't support the need for businesses to have the skills that they are crying out for, why he opposes our economy getting the skills that it needs. I mean, I'll just take one example. A woman enrolled in a diploma of nursing in Victoria would have to find more than $15,000 to access that course. And without this initiative, we will not have people, at the numbers we have, enrolling in areas of demand in all sectors of our economy. This is a successful initiative. This is a collaboration between this government and state and territory governments in industry, and we'll continue to deliver more. We're starting another 300,000 fee-free TAFE places for next year, and we'll continue to supply the skills to this economy.
Yeah. Give a call to the honourable member for Kennedy.
Honourable Minister, Eureka Stockade's use it or lose it mining law was enacted by Theodore and later by Jockey Peterson's aspirational working class governments. These laws were abolished in 1995, enabling, inter alia, Glencore's Mount Isa copper mine to announce its closure. Minister, will you enforce the legislation which makes mandatory a $1,000 million environmental rehabilitation? This would rescue 1,200 jobs by forcing Glencore to either A, continue mining, or B, on-sell its interests to parties aspiring stability and prosperity for our mining communities.
Give a call to the Minister for the Environment and Water.
Thank you so much, Mr Speaker, and thank you to the member for Kennedy for his question about the Mount Isa copper mine facing closure. Of course, the thoughts of all of those in this parliament are with the workers who face an uncertain future following the announcement of the mine closure. I'm encouraged to hear that workers, unions, the local council are working together to support those impacted by the decisions. Mount Isa Copper has been a cornerstone of the Queensland economy for 60 years, and as a government we are absolutely committed to supporting the community and ensuring the city has a strong future, including, as the Resources Minister has pointed out frequently recently, a big future in essential critical minerals. The member for Kennedy has raised policies of Red Ted Theodore. I'm not sure where to go with those exactly. I know Red Ted was one of the member for Kennedy's three favourite Queensland Labor treasurers. But
order. The treasurer will pause and the member for Kennedy just member for Kennedy, hold your horses. We're just I'm just going to deal with the point of order. So it was a point of order on relevance. You need to state the... Okay. Well, that's what you need to state. Moving forward, everyone needs to raise a point of order and state what it is, not just... Order. The question did mention Red Ted Theodore, and the minister was referring to that, so she's entitled to give some context to what was in the question, but I'm just going to ask her to make sure she's relevant to the question. She has the call.
Thank you. Look, I think the member for Kennedy is really referring to the responsibilities of mining companies to clean up after themselves, and we are absolutely on a unity ticket on that. We absolutely agree that a company like this that's been in operation for 60 years, if they've made commitments about how they're going to clean up after themselves, should do it. And of course he's right in saying that there are jobs in post-mining rehabilitation work, and we want to see that work carried out appropriately. On this specific example that he's using, it is largely a matter for the Queensland Government, responsibility for ensuring that the mining company complies with their rehabilitation obligations rests primarily with the Queensland Government. But, you know, and this is done in a variety of different ways with money set aside, bank assurances and so on. But I would say to the member for Kennedy, we agree with him that if mines close, they need to be cleaned up. And we agree with him that we are absolutely committed to seeing a future for Mount Isa, for the people who have made a living and made their home in a place that relies on mining. We are going to work to ensure that. The Palaszczuk government has already announced a support package of up to $50 million for mine workers and for the Mount Isa community. And that includes $30 million to accelerate development of resource projects in the Northwest Minerals province for the next 5 years, and another $20 million to be matched dollar for dollar by Glencore in a structural adjustment package for Mount Isa and for Queensland. Thanks.
The call to the honourable member for McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Prime Minister. How has the Australian government supported the release of hostages kidnapped by Hamas?
The call to the Prime Minister.
I thank the member for McNamara for his question and his strong advocacy for the people of his electorate. The Australian government has called consistently, unequivocally, for the release of all hostages taken on October 7 during Hamas's terrorist attack on Israel. Earlier this week, the Israeli ambassador, Amir Maimon, brought a delegation of Israeli citizens to Parliament House, and I, along with the Deputy Prime Minister and the Foreign Minister, met with them in my office. These are people who are doing it incredibly tough, but we're here having lost loved ones, either through being murdered or by having them kidnapped. One of the people who we met was a young woman, Mika. She's 18. She spoke about her brother, Amit, who's 16. And it is good news that since we met, Amit has been one of the hostages released. We have been very consistent about our concern about the loss of innocent lives, Israelis and Palestinians. Every innocent life matters. But what we saw last night in Melbourne at a hotel in Docklands goes beyond the right of people to peacefully protest in our democratic country. Yeah. Why people would make the conscious decision to hold a protest where the families of these people were staying is beyond my comprehension. Beyond my comprehension and beyond contempt. I'm appalled by the actions of these protesters and I condemn them. This does nothing to advance the cause of the Palestinian people. It does nothing to advance justice for Palestinians or peace in the region. My government supports a two-state solution in the region in the interests of Palestinians and Israelis. But at the moment, what we are seeing is humanity just cast aside. There is no excuse, no circumstances where people should organise a demonstration against grieving families. None. None. I call it out and I express on behalf of the Australian government our regret to those families who we met with. This is not the Australian way. People like Tali Kitzner, she lost her son Segev, and all of the families had, we had a very respectful private conversation. It was captured at the beginning, but they wanted to just tell their stories. I've also had discussions with Palestinians who have lost their family members during this conflict. It's awful. People need to really think about where we are as a nation. We are a successful multicultural nation. There is no place in this country to try to bring a conflict in that sort of way, through that sort of action here in Australia, regardless of what views people might have about international politics. We should be respectful. We should have compassion. We should understand that people are hurting, and Australians of different backgrounds and different faiths are hurting at the moment. And I just say we just need to bear that in mind. I spoke on the day I was elected, on that evening, about kindness. This country could do with a bit more kindness and a complete rejection of any action that targets people who are going through such a difficult time.
Yeah. Non-indulgence, the Leader of the Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I want to start by thanking the member for McNamara for not just the question, but also his actions. And I saw him recently at the opening of the Holocaust Museum in Melbourne. And like many members of the Jewish community, he has been astounded and really in disbelief as to some of the scenes, and the Prime Minister's detailed the latest episode of that. So I pay credit to him for the leadership he's showing in his local community and many others. It is an act of depravity, and it is an act that rightly is condemned. And I hope that these organisers and those who are responsible and others who are like-minded hear a very definite voice from this Parliament, from the Prime Minister, from myself, from all members, that we condemn those actions. The fact is that people were taken, people were slaughtered, people have been held captive, people have been tortured, raped, murdered. And somehow people have seen fit to occupy a hotel lobby or to maintain a presence where they think they can intimidate the families of those victims. And the Prime Minister is exactly right to say that it has no place in our country whatsoever. Yeah. And I hope that the police and other authorities can take whatever is available to them under the law to deal with it, because it is a completely and utterly depraved act. Yeah. And the concentration of people's thoughts now should be on getting those who remain in captivity, who are still held hostage, for them to be released and to be returned back to their family so that some peace and civility and stability can be restored to the region. But the reality is that these are acts of a depraved terrorist organisation listed, prescribed as such in this country. And from day one on October 7, the actions of those individuals and their supporters, including, unfortunately, in our country, as we've just evidenced, stand to be absolutely condemned by all Australians.
Yeah. Call the Prime Minister.
I ask that further questions be placed on the notice paper.